Happy birthday to Dave White. Happy birthday to him. It's Dave White's birthday, la la la. Say happy birthday to me. The end. Linoleum knife.
Oh my God. You're the worst. Apologies to Blue.
Hey Blue, thanks for my birthday song.
Our wonderful composer who
he wrote my happy birthday song.
Who does not deserve to have his work pooped upon and shredded to bits.
No, that was
and chopped and screwed by Dave White, birthday notwithstanding. You're getting coal in your birthday stocking.
Blue, I want you to send the audio clip of that to Blue.
No.
And tell him how I
he's gonna rescind our permission to use that piece of music.
We just, Blue and I just did a duet.
You're terrible. You know, it's funny, my birthday was a couple weeks ago, and I didn't feel the need to, like, smear it all over this program like so many cow chips.
You missed an opportunity.
You're disgusting. You're Dave White, film critic for linoleum-knife.com.
Not yet.
Yeah, you haven't done a dang thing yet. I haven't
done anything yet. You're Alonzo Duralde. You are the film reviews editor of The Wrap. Also, you are What the Flick with three others.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is a podcast of the cinema.
And I don't think it would have been a problem for you to, you know, gleefully, happily announce your birthday a couple weeks ago.
I'm not gross.
There's nothing gross about being happy about your own happy birthday.
I limit this, as my mother would say. Check yourself, birthday boy.
Tomorrow.
No, this is airing Sunday, so this is your birthday.
Yeah, but we're recording it right now.
Yes.
Aren't you going to post it today?
I'm going to post it
on Saturday.
No, I'm going to post it Sunday morning.
Why not?
Because Sunday morning is
maximize your crowd potential. Build your brand.
You have no idea what you're talking about.
Option your
optimizing.
Optimize your options.
Maybe I will post
social
it on
media.
Maybe I will post it on Saturday. People are used to Sunday. It's, you know.
I know, but we're recording it on Saturday.
Yes, we are.
Today's the 6th.
Yes.
Tomorrow's the 7th.
Yes.
That's my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be 51 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So is Prince.
Oh, really? You're the same year, too?
So, no, I don't know if he's 51. I don't know how old he is. I think he's older than me.
I think he is, too.
Yeah.
We're losing our young audiences in drove now. They thought we were young and hip, and now you're revealing that you're 51.
If anyone has been listening to this podcast and doesn't understand that I'm 751 years old. Furthermore.
I'm sure that's clear, not to worry.
Aaliyah once told us that age ain't nothing but a number.
Mm-hmm. And look what happened to her.
Right.
And you know where she probably got all that age is nothing but a number jive?
I know where she got it from. From her husband of a moment or two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They got that. I think that was annulled.
I think probably, yes.
I believe that was annulled.
She was probably 9 when it happened.
I believe she was like 15 or 16.
Same thing.
Yeah. She wasn't a grown person.
No.
Yeah. No, you know what happened to her? She got on a plane.
Yes.
And planes are the problem.
No.
Yes.
No.
Planes are the problem.
Planes are not the problem.
The other problem is you harshing on my birthday. Because it's really great that my birthday is happening right now.
Because, you know what? I was all pro your birthday, but now you've ruined it.
You know, it's going to be fantastic. Tomorrow, when it's my birthday, all the places we're going to go eat.
That's true.
I've already got my plan.
I have to say, that was a really shrewd birthday idea, because I'm always racking my brain, and I think, what would be a fun thing to do? Where should we go? What should we do? And
let's
you were like, let's go eat in a million places.
Let's go eat at all the places. All the places we haven't been to yet.
Yes.
Or that I've been to that I'm trying to get you to go to with me.
Or ones that neither of us have been to. Or, yeah.
So, what was I going to say about things that were not my birthday?
I have no idea.
Oh, movie reviews.
Sadly, neither of us saw United Passions, which is...
I'm not interested.
But I just find the existence of this movie coming out right now...
Well, that's funny.
Hilarious. Because a couple of weeks ago, I remember getting an email from a publicist, and I get a lot of emails from a lot of publicists about a lot of movies, because a lot of movies open, you know, even if they're opening on one screen and they're available on video on demand or whatever. So I get this email about how United Passions is opening, and it's this stirring movie about the formation of FIFA and the World Cup. And I just thought, no, thank you. And then, of course, last week, FIFA gets all these indictments from the Department of Justice, and the head of FIFA steps down. And everybody talks about how they've been massively corrupt for years and years and years, but now finally they're getting busted for it. And I thought, well, we need to review United Passions. So I assigned it to Tim Appello, and it's up on the wrap if you want to read it. Yeah, and you know, FIFA helped fund it, of course, so naturally it's like, FIFA's so great.
Goal!
It's not bad.
Yeah.
You would never make it to a callback. That was too short, but, you know.
That was too short?
I think, by soccer standards, yes.
It was starting to hurt.
Yeah. You have to really, it's the whole...
It hurts. Your, when I,
you have to train your epiglottis or whatever to really
hold that. It hurts
when
I go up that high. Like, I was singing along to Ariana Grande the other day in the car.
God. Uh-huh.
What? And, she's a little tiny lady.
Yes.
With a very high up voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to sing along with her. It's not easy to do. And
Well, you could sing along with her in your own octave the way you do when you do Kylie karaoke.
I was
la 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 la.
I was trying to match note for note.
You were.
Just no.
Oh, Ariana.
I was trying to match note for note Ariana Grande. And that's...
No.
It was hard, and it hurt. And
yeah.
As I strained my throat, and then I was alone in the car, but I just cracked myself up.
I'm just imagining
you're... It was like feeling really stupid.
I'm imagining your vocal cord going, poing, like a violin string, you know, that's been stretched too tight. No.
I'm going to keep practicing, though.
Follow that dream.
What? The next time the cassette breaks, I'm going to sing Break Free by Ariana Grande featuring Zed.
Everybody's always featuring. So what's featuring?
I think it's actually Zed featuring Ariana Grande.
So I don't know.
I believe that's the
official. I think actually it is Ariana Grande featuring Zed.
Whatever.
I don't know.
It's going to be featuring me. And my newly found falsetto.
Look out, Jimmy Somerville.
Yeah. It's going to get crazy. Look, karaoke's going to happen again someday.
I suppose, yeah.
I'm going to need a new jam.
Mm.
So yeah, I'm practicing my break free.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about lately, like, what my karaoke jam would be if I was karaokeing anytime soon. And I don't know. Part of me wants to kind of dig backwards and do like some Kenny Loggins action.
Some Kenny Loggins action.
Action, yes.
We have a whole book written by Kenny Loggins about the action he and his wife.
His then wife. They split up, which I should tell you everything you need to know about how valuable
entire
that book is.
Entire chapters about passionate lovemaking and their dietary habits. And it's an incredible book.
They say it's a hopeless fight.
What was the name of that book?
But I say I gotta try. I don't remember.
It's on the shelf, but
I'd have to get up and walk over.
I'd have to get up and walk over to touch it.
Just Google the Kenny Loggins book. You'll find it.
Google crazy Kenny Loggins book. It'll pop up. In fact, I'm gonna do that right now and see what happens.
Look, just because he and his estranged wife wanted to let you know about all the things that made their marriage so wonderful while it lasted. Before it ended, you know, that this is a free country. He's an artist. He's got to share this stuff.
Yeah, I wrote Crazy Kenny Loggins Book into Google, and up came the name of the book. The Unimaginable Life, Lessons Learned on the Path of Love. It came out in 1996. Kenny and Julia Loggins wrote that book together. It's a really wonderful book, and you can get used copies of it on Amazon for one penny plus shipping. I can't recommend this book highly enough to all of you. You're going to super enjoy it.
What lessons of love have you learned in 20 years with me?
Don't talk to you for the first hour of every day. That's pretty much the only lesson that needs to be learned about you.
Mm.
Like, you're fairly simple to deal with. All you require is regular meals, some treats in between, coffee in the morning, but no talking to you for like an hour after you wake up. Because if more than a gentle, instructive sentence such as, "I cleaned the coffee pot for you," something like that, so that you know that that's a thing.
Uh-huh. That has transpired.
Nothing other than that. No questions, no information. Because I'm up, like, as you know, and maybe the listeners, I'm up a good 90 minutes to 2 hours before you every morning.
Because
you wake up at like 7:30 and I'm up at like 5.
You're crazy.
That's just my body. My body goes sproing.
You were a school teacher 20 years ago, and you just can't stop waking up then.
So, that's all. You just have to not talk to you. Don't do anything to you.
Well,
no
then
touching you, no jostling you, no petting you.
Well, then that's not going to make for much of a book. If we're going to try and go down the Kenny and Julia Loggins
path. Oh, you want us to write a book about how to have love?
I'm just saying. I thought maybe if you had more things you had learned, there might be a book in it. But if that's it, just don't talk to me for an hour after I wake up, and then that's barely a pamphlet.
I'm
going to
put out a zine about how to have... Look, this would, the book, the name of the book would be How to Be Married to Alonzo Duralde.
A user's guide.
Yeah. And who else would need to read that except me? And I already learned it and wrote it.
That's true. You're right.
It doesn't matter.
You're right. It's all moot.
Ain't nobody else having you. Although, two ladies approached me this week.
Oh, yes. Well.
At an event.
They best slow their roll.
Who asked me what it would take.
Get away from my man.
To change my ways.
Mm-hmm.
Get me off the D train. Get me on the L train.
The L train?
The lady train.
That's not really the anodyne to the D train.
It is to me.
Oh, fine.
And so... they were joking.
Uh-huh.
I think one of them was not joking.
Hilarious.
I think one of them was not joking.
And remind me to throw a drink in her face next time
we're at a cocktail party. No, they're adorable.
I'm gonna be Kiki.
No, you're not. So,
I believe we need to have a meeting in the ladies' room, Miss. Regarding a conversation that you had with my husband.
Look, here's what's up. All you have to remember is you have to treat me perfectly. Forever.
Uh-huh.
And I won't run off with a woman. I don't know what else you need.
I think the response is promise.
It's time to talk about movies, which I did not write any reviews for on linoleum-knife.com. Here's why. I've been gone.
It's true.
This week.
You were on a writer's retreat.
I was on a writer's retreat.
A one-man Chautauqua.
I was on a writer's retreat with Anne Lamott. Teaching her about my wisdom. And helping her with her next book on how to be a writer.
Uh-huh. That's great. I'm sure she said, really appreciated it.
Dave, will you meet me in the desert?
Walk me through it.
And teach me again.
Your ways.
Your ways of how to be a writer. So that I can, in turn, write a book about how to be a writer.
Mm-hmm.
With everything I know from you. And I did that with her.
Mm-hmm.
I helped her. She thanked me. I went on my way. But I didn't have time to write any movie reviews this week. Mm-hmm. I just wanted the week off. I wanted to go off and jumpstart project-y things.
Yes.
And then and I just decided there were going to be no written reviews this week for linoleum-knife.com. Those will begin next week.
All right.
You say that with a tone that suggests disbelief.
Me?
Disbelief?
All right. If you say so.
Okay.
We'll check in next week and see how that's coming along.
Look, it's going to be, I'm going to write reviews mm-hmm. of any length that I choose on any film that I choose. Anybody who doesn't like the omissions can come here, because if I don't write about it, we will be talking about it here.
Unless, of course, you pull an Entourage and don't go at all.
Look, I changed my mind about Entourage after... Okay, I decided first that my gift to me for my birthday mm-hmm. was not having to see Entourage. Mm-hmm. Then all the reviews started coming in, and they're so funny and so scathing that I thought, oh, this is like Sex in the City 2 for guys. I have to go see this. So I changed my mind, and I decided I was going to go see it. And my first plan was to go to the Grove yesterday, see Insidious 3.
Right.
And then see Entourage back to back. They were right
theater hop.
And they were right back to back. And then, after Insidious 3, I was like, it's National Donut Day.
What do they do over at...
At Bob's?
At Bob's.
On National Donut Day?
Yeah.
They give free donuts to all the military and firefighters and the police.
Okay.
And then
don't the police get free donuts anyway?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And then they have a line of 400 people for donuts.
Yeah. Donut Day. Somebody was saying that
Donut Day is like a reminder to you that you like donuts and you have to go get them.
Donut Day is for us what St. Patrick's Day is for alcoholics.
Yeah.
Sort of like, eh. Amateurs.
Exactly. Like, I walked up to Bob's and there's a line of seriously 13 people in front of me. And I thought, this will move fast because they...
Sure, yeah.
They knock it out when the women are there.
Oh, the guys. Oh, they're the worst.
No. It was the women were there.
Oh, okay.
So they were going fast.
Yes, okay, good.
Guys of Bob's Coffee and Donuts, we think you're great. Also, we think you're slow. Okay. Just in case anyone knows
you're
anyone
right,
who
you're
works
right.
at Bob's
you're,
Coffee
you're,
and Donuts.
You're lovely people, but look at your game, because the women are leaving you in the dust.
Yeah. When the women
when it
are
comes
there,
to customer service.
When the women are there, things are efficient.
Yeah.
And when the guys are there, it's not
less so.
Quite as efficient. But the women were there. The line moved quickly. I got my two. I dunked them in the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
It's very nice. And
coffee in this case being a glass of milk with a splash of brown.
No. I obviously in some countries, my way of drinking coffee is the way that people drink coffee: half coffee, half milk.
Yes, you have. It's a Cubano, let's say,
and a half coffee, half milk, and half sugar.
That's 110%.
Yeah. Okay, so I saw Insidious 3.
Yes,
but I just bailed on Entourage.
Yes.
I may triple change my mind, but don't count on that.
Fine.
If I do, it'll probably be later on down the line when it hits, when a Blu-ray arrives in this home without any cost to us.
Uh-huh. Yes, Entourage is exactly like Sex and the City 2, especially with the scene where Turtle pulls out a bunch of condoms and says, I have sex, I'm a woman!
Is there a big bowl of macaron that they don't eat?
They do not do macaron in this movie. There's a lot of margaritas in this movie.
The most horrible moment of Sex and the City 2 was that astounding tall plate full of... just many different colors and flavors of macarons, and none of them were touched. They did not eat them at all. No touching of the treats.
I imagine at least SJP, but maybe all four of those women, when they do eat, that it's like the time that Patsy ate a potato chip on Ab Fab.
What? I don't remember
and
that.
And she like puts it in her mouth and like sort of... moves her lower jaw up to try and like bite it, like she has no idea how to actually deal with solid food.
Here's my guess: Kim Cattrall, she eats.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Like a truck driver.
She has the lumberjack breakfast.
And Cynthia Nixon probably eats too.
I bet Cynthia Nixon eats, but not while they're making those movies, because they're putting her in crazy outfits that she would never ordinarily wear.
The other two,
Chris and Davis,
they don't
not eat.
They don't eat things.
No.
Yeah. But I saw Insidious 3.
Yes.
And it is a movie about things that happened before Insidious 1 and 2.
It's a prequel, because they ended Insidious 2, and this is a spoiler, but too bad. Insidious 2, they kill off Lin Shaye.
Yeah.
And Lin Shaye is the best thing in these movies.
She's the main character in all three of these
films. Like, she's in the first one, we're thinking, oh, so she's basically playing...
No disrespect
playing,
to the A-list actors that they get to be in these movies.
Yeah, Rose Byrne, we love you, but Lin Shaye really belongs... The movies belong
to
her.
These are her films.
Yeah, and when she waltzes into the first one, I remember thinking, oh, so you're basically playing Beatrice Straight in Poltergeist. But as it went along, it was like she was a lot of fun to watch. She was really cool. And so, they bump her off in two, and I thought, well, that's dumb.
Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron has been born. Now the movie can start.
So for three, it was like, well, we made a mistake. So let's do a prequel so that Lin Shaye can still be alive. And lo and behold, she is. So it's almost kind of a weirdly an origin story about her and the two, her like nerdy sidekicks.
The dummies.
Yeah.
The dummy people that are the ghost hunter guys.
Yes. One of whom is the writer-director of this film.
Which one?
Specs.
Which one is that?
Not the big guy with the mohawk, the little nerdy guy wearing the Casper crew jacket. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
That guy, that's Lee Whannell. He wrote...
Oh, that's Lee Whannell.
Yeah, he's written all the films. The first two were directed by James Wan, who has gone on to bigger and better things.
Yeah.
And now Whannell is directing as well. And, as a horror movie, it's a PG-13 horror movie.
It's about a young girl. Her mother's dead. She misses her... She tries to contact her spirit to guide her through a college audition. She wants to go to an arts college. She has to do
drama school.
And the minute she tries to contact her mother, a demon starts following her.
Yeah. Someone else gets the page.
And this is ghost lore that I didn't know. Lin Shaye tells her, oh, by the way, when you call out to a spirit, they all hear you, which is kind of a drag.
Yeah.
And you think, wait a second, I didn't say your name.
No one's talking to you.
Yeah, I said my mom's name. Well, like, I don't want to, for example, let's say that I tried to Ouija board my mother into the after nether land.
The further, they call it. Whatever. In those movies.
I don't want Mussolini responding.
Well, it could be that
you're
Lin
not
Shaye,
my mother,
it
Mussolini.
Could, it could be that Lin Shaye's character is saying that because she's trying to ensure that people only go to a licensed professional and not dabble in these things by themselves.
I suppose.
Yeah.
But
make sure that you're going
comes,
to Mr. Goodwrench.
The demon comes and does things. None of this is scary, by the way.
No.
Although not 1 minute of this movie is scary.
The demon does... I think she summoned the spirit of Blake Edwards, because she gets more and more injured as the movie goes along by this thing.
This film is about two different things. Unintentionally or not, this film is about teenage girls not having control over their own bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And men, specifically men... doing everything they can to bind up women.
Yeah.
So she breaks both legs, body cast. She, goes out of control. It takes four guys to hold her down and tie her up to keep her safe from herself.
Well, and it's also about how in a way it's sort of a metaphor about how about women's health and how men don't listen and don't understand.
Yeah, she has a father, Dermot Mulroney, who is in fact the worst, but least attentive father in the world.
He's trying.
No, he's not. He's flummoxed and flustered for no apparent reason. All he ever walks around doing in the film is saying, "I'm so stressed." I'm like, "What are you stressed about? Nothing's happening." You got a daughter who's taking care of your younger son. What do you have to do except go to work every day? Pack a lunch for yourself.
I'm just, look.
The end. You're not stressed.
I'm trying to imagine, like, if my mother had died 10 years earlier and my dad suddenly had to deal with kids in the house that, like, needed tending
to. Know what would have happened? Here's what would have happened. Your older sisters would have stepped in.
Well, yes, but there's only two kids in this movie.
And Angelinas would have come over a lot more often.
There's only two.
And made you the muffles.
There's only two kids in
this
movie.
Eat your muffles.
Okay.
It's muy delicious.
All right, fine. So if my mother died a decade earlier and my sister, who's 5 years older than I, were the only ones in the house, that's my dad would be Dermot Mulroney in this case. He would be, like, totally flummoxed.
Yeah, but you know what? Your dad also had an actual stressful job.
Well, your dad was on the phone a lot, yelling at people. That seemed stressful.
Your dad was a surgeon. So it's not like Dermot Mulroney did not have a surgeon's job.
Well, he's like a contractor or something.
How much work do they do?
Well, there was a lot of order barking on the phone. It seemed very stressful.
Inattentive, pointless father.
Oh, fine.
And so she's just alone, basically, trying to fend off demons by herself. So again, this film is about teenage girls having everything about their lives controlled by men. The other story is Lin Shaye. Lin Shaye, it's her movie.
Yes.
It's all about her life and her grief and her...
depression.
Her depression and finding... the Ghostbuster within.
Yeah. She spends the first half of this movie in a bathrobe. That's how depressed she is.
Yeah.
Because her husband has committed suicide, and in her attempt to reach out to him in the further, and in the dark corners of the further, I guess where the suicides go, she has attracted the attention of this other spirit who has it out for her now. And it takes being the one person on Earth who can save this teenage girl... I forget the actress's name. She was like a Disney Channel alum. That's what... to snap her out of her funk and get her back into doing what she does well, which is seeing dead people. I'm a big fan of character actors. I think they're great, and I love when they get this sort of moment where some filmmaker's like, you know what? I'm making you a lead. So it's great to, like, Lin Shaye, you probably remember her as the over suntanned landlady in There's Something About Mary, or the other terrifying...
Oh, that was her?
Yeah. Mm. Or the other terrifying landlady who has sex with Woody Harrelson in Kingpin. She's been in movies, I looked it up on IMDb, for 40 years. Her first film was Hester Street.
Whoa!
She played a prostitute in Hester Street. This is, she's just one of those actresses who works steadily and you've seen her in things and it's like, oh, that lady. But here she finally gets this opportunity to just have a movie that is mostly devoted to her. And it's great.
Yeah. She's, I gotta say, this movie is not scary. And the first half is kind of boring. But as the story continues, it becomes more and more and more and just about Lin Shaye.
Yeah.
And her character. And she's, first of all, so good as this character. She gets all the best. She gets all the best lines. Mm-hmm. She's the Maggie Smith of horror movies, basically. it's like when the Dowager Countess shows up on Downton Abbey. You know she's going to say something saucy.
Here so come the zing.
The monster tries to get her, and it's like, this is how you die. And she goes, not today. It's not. Boom.
Slam.
Yeah. And so. I think she's wonderful.
Yeah, no, I'm...
Did you also notice on IMDb the number of films she has currently in production that she's in?
How many?
11.
Wow.
11 forthcoming projects that she's got going.
Like I said, she works.
Yeah. So, is this a good film?
Not
great.
It's not like
a good Insidious film. I know that.
In my review, I said
the second one is genuinely good.
It's not a great horror film, but as a showcase for Lin Shaye, it's a lot of fun.
And
it's worth seeing.
I kind of would recommend people see it.
Yeah.
For her.
Yeah. Totally.
I'm down for her.
And I'm more of a pushover for the jump scares than you are. And I have to say, there were two or three in this movie.
They're useless.
That were pretty good. They weren't great. On a PG-13 level,
if you are jumping because of the shock cuts and the jump scares and the boom noises, you're 7 years old.
Well, there you have it. Christy yeah. Lemire and I were like, every so often we'd both be like, yeah.
Oh yeah, you two are a pair. I'm surprised. I'm surprised the Linda Wheat wasn't sitting in between you going, blah. You three, actually. You and your backup singers.
Yeah. My ladies.
I'm always, when it comes time to watch a horror movie with you or either of those two do people,
mm-hmm.
my first thought is they're going to be grabbing me the entire time.
I don't touch you in horror movies.
Alinda
does.
In The Conjuring, Alinda was like grabbing my arm, grabbing my leg, and I was like, you have to not grab my leg because it's you're tickling me. I was like, grab my arm. You can grab my arm. No goosing me throughout the rest of the
Tom
film.
Tom Ford and I were grabbing each other's arms in The Conjuring. We saw it at LA Film Festival. Not famous Tom Ford, our friend Tom Ford. Because it's scary. That movie is scary.
Our friend Tom Ford is now a big deal enough that he gets his own. He gets to share a credit card at the end of Spy.
It's true. And we'll talk about Spy after this word from our friends Roger and Chris.com.
Guess what I learned about this week?
What did you learn this week?
I learned about dimethyl
You learned it real well.
Dimethyl fumarate.
Uh-huh. What's that?
It's an antifungal chemical that they spray on furniture
mm-hmm.
when they ship it overseas so that it doesn't get infested with stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that bad?
Yeah. It'll basically turn you into Julianne Moore in Safe.
Ah, okay.
You'll pass out, drive around empty car parks.
Wind up living
in a ceramic yurt.
I see.
have a hyperventilating attack at the dry cleaners.
Ugh.
Yeah. Drink milk really loudly.
Dance to Whenever I Call You Friend.
We're talking James about LeGros. The film Safe, by the way. And if you don't know, if you haven't seen this film, then you don't know what we're talking about. But
and you should see it. There's a lovely Criterion collection.
It is the best. It is the best American film of the 90s. It is the best American-made film of the 90s.
I'll have to think on that one, but I'm not immediately disputing it, no. Anyway, so I guess what you're going to tell me then is that Roger and Chris.com do not use dimethyl sulfurate.
Well, you know, it's like...
Is that what it's called?
Each week... No, it's dimethyl fumarate.
Dimethyl fumarate,
Fumarate. Fumarate! Each week I go to RogerandChris.com and I hunt around. Because the last time I talked to Chris, he's like, just talk about the furniture. I was like, but you have so many other categories of things to sell and buy. And he's like, just talk about the furniture. Because that's like, you know, that's their bread and butter.
Sure, yeah.
You know, they ain't making a living on those little glass trivets.
No.
And so. Yeah,
let's talk settees and
like,
chaperones.
He's like, yeah, let's talk about the furniture. And so I was like, all right, well, I need to... go learn more things about the furniture than
you do.
Other than to tell everyone it sure is pretty mm-hmm. and that you can sex on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
What else is there to tell them?
Well, they don't have that chemical on them.
Okay.
Yeah. And I also learned another thing.
What's that?
But I have to ask him for more details.
Uh-huh.
When you get a couch or an armchair
mm-hmm.
from RogerandChris.com.
The home of the unboring home.
Home of the unboring home.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a vegan option. I don't understand what that means.
Is that like pleather?
Maybe. I don't know what it means to have a vegan couch.
It's stuffed with broccoli. I don't know.
But I'm fascinated by this. But it's on the site. It says vegan and eco option.
They use chickpeas.
I don't know. But I'm kind of into the idea of having a vegan chair. Because would that be great? Because then... Doug and John can come over
mm-hmm.
for board game night.
And they can sit in the chair knowing that it's
vegan. Sit in the vegan throne, eating the vegan pizza from Fresh Brothers.
Which, if you ever really wanted to relive that high school cafeteria pizza experience.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
I ordered the vegan pizza for your board game birthday night. And just for these two friends who are vegans. And... they were like, oh, we love this. And I was like, I do too. It reminds me of cafeteria pizza. Like the kind I had when I was in fifth grade.
Because there was no dairy in that either.
There was nothing in that. That was meat or perishable. And and they said, oh, but it tastes so good. And I was like, eh, it tastes good in the way that school pizza tastes good.
In that it's pizza.
Yeah. It doesn't taste like... And then I offended them because I said, vegans are like smokers and they don't remember what things are supposed to taste like. They're like, that's not true. I was like, no, it is. Super true. Totally, totally true.
You've been operating in your world of cashew cheese for so long.
Because we were talking about vegan tacos. I had made the vegan tacos with the lentils.
Oh, yeah, those were good.
And the cookbook said, oh, this lentil filling is going to taste just like meat. And I was like, uh-huh. So I made it.
Yeah.
And it was delicious.
It just didn't taste like meat.
It tastes like meat.
Don't get crazy here.
If you don't have a memory of what meat tastes like, it might taste something akin to a fond remembrance of meat that you enjoyed in 1986.
It's warm and hearty.
Yeah.
And it has the tastes like thyme.
But it ain't meat.
No.
Nothing.
But there is no meat in a vegan couch from RogerandChris.com.
You get a meatless couch from RogerandChris.com. There's no eggs. There's no dairy.
No honey.
No. Is honey vegan?
Yeah. It's an animal product.
Yeah, but they don't... The honey's... The bees just go... And then out comes the honey. Well,
chickens don't die when they lay eggs. You can't have that either.
Yeah, but technically that could become a chicken, though.
I believe that honey
can't become anything.
I believe that honey counts as a vegan no-no.
Really?
Really. So you're never going to become
a vegan. No, I'm never becoming a vegan because I love that honey too much.
I know you do.
Yeah. I could live without most of the other stuff, though. This is what I've learned from cooking lots of vegan recipes, that I could live without most of it. Cheese and honey and butter.
Yeah, is there butter? You're not walking away from butter.
Cheese and honey and butter, those are really it. Those are what I couldn't get away from ever for the rest of my life.
Ribs.
Also ribs. And steaks.
But anyway, RogerandChris.com.
Your couch will have none of that.
No.
Also, everything they make it in the United States.
Yes.
It's sturdy. It's beautiful.
It is.
These are like handsome pieces of furniture.
Yes.
And
people will walk in and be like, wow, you have taste.
You have taste and you bought something like a grown-up.
Yes.
And also, if you go and you want to buy not a couch or an armchair, you want to buy a piece of lighting from them, you go to RogerandChris.com, you select any lighting thing that you want to buy, and you get 20% off of your purchase if you use the code word KNIFE, KNIFE.
That's right. And that's how they know that we sent you. So
this has been an advertisement for RogerandChris.com.
Amen.
The end. Why don't you talk about Spy that our friend Tom Ford has
You talk about Spy because I'm going to be talking about Entourage by myself.
You're going to talk about Spy because I have to go check the oven of the thing that's in the oven.
Then why don't I talk about Entourage?
All right. Talk about Entourage now.
And then we'll talk
then
about
Then we'll talk
Spy.
About Spy.
Okay. So I never watched Entourage on television. Having seen the movie now, I feel a lot better about that choice. But I will say the movie does at least throw you a bone if you have never watched the thing before.
What's it about?
By having Piers Morgan show up at the beginning and tell you everyone's life story. But the movie basically starts 9 days after the show ended. And much in the same way that Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 did, it pretty much undoes everybody's happy ending. The show, I guess, ended with Vinny Chase getting married, and now, 9 days later, they both decided to annul it. Ari, his agent, played by Jeremy Piven, decided to retire in Italy, and now he is running back to Hollywood to run a studio. And for his first big project, he wants Vinny to be the star of it, and Vinny says he'll do it only if he can direct, which they let him do. And so then cut to 8 months later, and Vinny has made this movie that's like about, it's a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde remake, but Mr. Hyde is now an EDM DJ or something. It looks ridiculous, but everybody in the movie keeps saying, telling you how brilliant it is. And so, so what happens? Oh, so they're trying to get more, they're trying to get more money to finish the movie, and that involves Ari having to go to Texas and grovel to the studio co-owner played by Billy Bob Thornton, who will only give them the money if his son Haley Joel Osment can go to L.A. and learn the business. And, of course, then sort of mild complications ensue, but nothing very complicated, which apparently is how the show worked. Like, anytime there was a whiff of anything that might be, you know, stakes or drama or complications, then they would just have a celebrity cameo. And that's what they do in this movie. So, yeah, it's dumb and dull, and I didn't laugh, and... If you were a big fan of the show and you're just dying to see these guys again on the big screen, this is basically like three episodes of the next season. Although the timeline apparently makes no sense because when the show ended, Sloane, played by Emmanuel Shrieky, is pregnant. And over the course of this movie, like I said, 9 days pass, and then about eight more months pass while Vinny's making his movie, and she's still pregnant. And who's pregnant? Like elephants? Who carries for 17 months? I don't even know.
No, it's supposed to be happening like not long after the show ended, right? That's what I heard.
No, the very beginning, like I said, is 9 days later.
Yes.
But then, like you literally get like an 8 months later card.
How pregnant was she when the show ended?
I see what you're saying. So like maybe she was hours pregnant at the end of the show. Yeah,
like they had just finished sexing on their couch from RogerandChris.com.
And she's all like, hey, that one hit. No, I don't know. I don't know how that works. But I think that she was pregnant enough that the timeline makes no sense. That's what I've been told anyway. Also, the timeline has the movie taking place in 2015, even though technically it should be taking place...
Do we know that it's 2015?
Well, they act like it. They say they reference things that are new and current.
Here's a thought. Who cares?
I'm just saying it's been pointed out by others since then.
Let's talk about Spy now.
The meat of it is that this movie is stupid. It's not very funny. All the women are like either bikini clad extras or they're nags or shrews.
What?
Or,
really?
Or wives or some combination thereof. The celebrity cameos are pointless. It's just dumb. I mean, I guess, again, I can't speak. I will say this. The Wrap sent me to see it as someone who'd never watched the show, and Tim Appello is somebody who was well-versed in the show, and even he wasn't having it. He felt like it had sort of already run its course, and these characters weren't as fun anymore. And the best performance in the movie comes from Ronda Rousey playing herself, whom Turtle is pursuing to date, and she beats the crap out of him, and I enjoyed that. And I liked Haley Joel Osment because I wasn't supposed to like his character, even though he is no less creepy or entitled than our supposed heroes. You should see it, Dave White.
Great. Like I say, when the Blu-ray shows up, maybe I'll pop it in iron clothes while I'm looking at it or whatever. Spy. Oh, how funny.
Spy is a riot.
Spy is super funny. Melissa McCarthy is an agent with the CIA. But they stick her at a desk.
She's a handler.
Yeah, her job is to handle the spy in the field. And her assigned spy in the field is always Jude Law, who she...
nurses a bit of a crush on.
Yeah.
And he's your sort of traditional...
James Bondy.
Exactly.
Guy.
Very, you know, dashing, British accent, looks good in a tuxedo kind of spy. But she's the one at Langley with access to like a million satellites and, you know, information about all the stuff and is sort of walking him through. Like, he's almost her video game avatar.
Yeah.
And then a thing happens where the identities of the agents in the field get blown, and so suddenly the only person they don't know about...
The only person the bad guys don't know
the
about.
The bad guys don't know about is Melissa McCarthy, as Susan Cooper. So she gets sent into the field for the first time, and of course, no one takes her seriously, even though she's super smart and super capable.
And they show you early on how she just destroyed the training program. Like, she's so good at taking down bad guys, at shooting people. Mm-hmm. Like, she's better than all the spies in the field, but
her self-esteem is not great.
But she doesn't have self-esteem to back it up. And they look at her and they're like, okay, well, you're a fat lady and we're going to put you at a desk.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, the film never says that right out, But that's the implication of every single move
interaction that she has with
that she has yeah. every single interaction that she has with everyone on the CIA.
And so when she finally gets her moment out in the field, rather than give her the usual sort of like spy identities, they give her like they make her even frumpier. They give her all these like awful cat sweatshirts and stuff. And even like when you know she has her scene, it's like the scene with Q, you know, where they get the gadgets and the weapons and stuff. And all of her weapons are disguised as like toe fungus spray. And hemorrhoid wipes, you know. She just cannot catch a break. Until then, she's finally out there. She's running around Europe, and she faces off with Rose Byrne, who is the one of the main villains. And their exchanges are so horrible and hilarious. Yeah. Like, the stuff they say to each other is, you're laughing, but you're putting your hand on your mouth and going, oh my God, come on, shut up. And the power dynamic keeps changing between the two of them as sort of who has the upper hand. So, like, whoever is dominating the other one is just ruthless. And they're hysterical.
I love them together. Rose Byrne, I think, has an uphill battle sometimes with being a really beautiful woman who is also really funny.
So she's the anti-Melissa McCarthy in a lot of ways.
Yeah, because...
people make presumptions.
Nothing scares men.
Yes.
Like a woman that they wish would be quiet, but who can cut them to the quick.
Right.
With hilarious stuff that they come up with themselves. Because I've seen clips of earlier, you know, stuff with Rose Byrne, like Bridesmaids and Neighbors, where she can
improv
stuff with people and... And so I know that when the Blu-ray for this comes out,
oh yeah, no doubt,
there'll be really long scenes of them improvising.
And the only thing straight guys are less interested in than a beautiful woman who can cut them to the quick is a woman they don't want to have sex with, you know. Which is and so much of the stuff that I read about Melissa McCarthy, that is so much the subtext. It just drives me up the wall. The other thing that makes me crazy is all the people going, oh, finally Melissa McCarthy in a movie that deserves her, and I'm like.
Did you see Bridesmaids?
Did you see The Heat?
The Heat was really funny.
Like, okay, yes, Tammy and Identity Thief were horrible, but let's not pretend that every single thing she's done up to now has been a piece of crap just to make this movie look
better. We're sorry to paint all you heterosexual men with the same brush.
No, that's right.
But you'll live.
How's it feel?
You'll be okay.
How you like it? Basting those juices for a while.
Jason Statham is hilarious.
He has great chemistry with her as well.
Allison Janney.
The set pieces of just her doing spy things are really great as well. And
she has mastered this brand of physical comedy where her size is the joke, but she's not the joke.
Right.
You know, and it's almost like, I mean, I think even more than Chris Farley ever managed to do that kind of thing. Like, I remember that scene in Heat where she's like trying to break into the car, you know, and there's movies here where she's, things here where she's like trying to deal with a scooter.
Navigate things that aren't functioning for her. Yeah.
And it's like the joke is, yes, I get it. I'm a big person in a world that is not designed for me. But the joke is ever, oh, poor fat lady.
No.
It's just, I'm trying to get this thing.
And that is the problem with Identity Thief and Tammy.
Yes.
Is that the joke is
poor fat lady.
Oh, poor fat lady. And then they want you to feel sorry for her in those two movies. And it's gross.
Yeah.
Because what's so beautiful
in the Paul Feig movies is she's in charge.
Yeah. She's dominant.
Yeah.
In fact. And that is always wonderful to watch. And she was the same way on Gilmore Girls.
Mm-hmm.
She was, of course, not profane. She was completely sweet and adorable and charming on Gilmore Girls. But she was a very controlling personality on Gilmore Girls and incredibly efficient and perfect at her job.
It's funny. We started rewatching the early episodes and like the shtick they tried to pull on her was that she was clumsy
and it didn't work.
Yeah. And then later it just became that she was super ruthlessly hyper efficient. Yeah. You know, but you're right. Sweet at the same time. And yeah, that was a much better fit.
Right. So the plot is nothing to speak of. Like, it's just a generic sort of spy plot.
I will say this, though. Like the best satires of genres, it works as a thing in that genre.
Yes.
They pay enough attention to the spy story so that you actually care about how what happens. Yes. They actually do generate suspense.
Yes.
So yeah, it's not groundbreaking, but at least they, you know, because I hate a spoof where we're so not invested in the story of the spoof
right.
that you just tune out and wait for the next joke, you know. This one, I think they kind of keep both those things happening.
You're right, they do. It's just not, you know, it's not the star of the movie.
No, no, no.
The spy story is not the star of the movie. The star of the movie is Rose Byrne's wig. Holy cow, her hair. This movie, it's flabbergasting. Also, Miranda Hart.
Right, yes. As
you need to understand the name Miranda Hart. You should know who she is.
If you're British, you're probably British, rolling your eyes that we're learning who she is now.
Yeah, well, they've kept her from us. I mean, she's been in a million things.
Call the Midwife is probably the biggest, best-known thing that she's done in the U.S.
Yes, because that's been on, what, BBC America?
Or PBS.
One of those. And that's a popular show over here. But I've never watched it.
Me neither.
Maybe I should watch
I've heard it's good.
Yeah.
There's too much TV.
I know. But she had her own show in England just called Miranda. You're like, so she's a...
It's Yvonne.
A known person over there.
Gotcha.
She's not known here at all.
Right.
She plays Melissa McCarthy's...
Like sort of best friend and sidekick.
Sidekick at the CIA, also an agent.
Yes.
And who steals all her scenes.
Mm.
She's really, really funny.
One thing I did kind of enjoy, just
I would go see this again.
I totally want to see this again. after watching Homeland, and so many things where you know Langley is always so slick and hyper efficient. The idea there's this running gag about that they have rats,
little mice crawling over everything. Yeah. Yeah,
I thought that was really funny. So yeah, it's terrific. You should totally go see Spy.
I don't have a DVD recommendation because I just wasn't thinking about it. But it doesn't matter because we have so many letters. I want to plow through them.
Make up something on the fly. You're the worst. All right.
Scott Roberts just lent me his DVD of Judy Garland and Little Nellie Kelly.
It's out of print.
Oh, is it?
Remember, you were trying to find it.
Oh, yeah. That's why I had to borrow it from
Yes.
Well, that's my pick.
Fine. No, your DVD pick is the Kenny Loggins book. There we go. My DVD pick this week is actually the first Sex and the City movie, which I was totally wishing that I could be watching instead of watching Entourage. I will say Entourage is better than Sex and the City 2, but most things are. But the first Sex and the City movie, it's real fun.
It's fine.
I had a great time.
Yeah, it's fine. The first Sex and the City movie is fine.
I'm not saying it's great cinema. I'm just saying it's entertaining. It's a perfect sick on the couch movie.
Mm. All right, so... we got a lot of letters.
Great.
How many minutes are we in right now?
52.
Okay. This is from Andrew. Hey, Alonzo and Dave. I just wanted to say how much of a fan I am of your podcast. I've been following Alonzo since What the Flick and just discovered your podcast a few months ago. I regret not having discovered it sooner. Your podcast makes going to the gym on Mondays much more enjoyable.
All right.
I doubt that.
More enjoyable. He didn't say it made it enjoyable.
All right. Even though I sometimes get awkward looks when I laugh out loud at your chemistry and banter.
Boo.
Oh! I hadn't read through all this letter all the way. I'm glad I didn't say Andrew's last name. I'm a closeted gay male.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In a conservative suburban town who cannot thank you enough for gay and lesbian films you recommend and review on your podcast, particularly the film Weekend.
Oh.
Alonzo, I also loved your weekly reviews of the TV show Looking.
Oh, thanks.
It is a damn shame that the show got canceled, but I am looking forward to the rumored film that they are making.
Me too.
It
should play in theaters like the Entourage movie.
I do not know if you have reviewed this film in any earlier podcast, but I highly recommend you check out the Dutch gay coming-of-age film Boys from 2014.
Oh, Boys is lovely.
I haven't seen it.
We screened it at Outfest last year, and it's now on DVD and streaming and everything.
So now, do you say it's good for a gay film festival, or it's good for real life?
It's good for real life. I mean, look, it's a sweet teen boy romance, it's not, you know... It's not safe, but it is, it's lovely.
Now to the important issue.
Mm.
When you mentioned the now defunct clothing company structure, I became giddy. Dave, you are completely wrong about structure. Digression?
No, I'm not.
And I don't blame Alonzo for wearing that attire at the time. During my high school adolescence in the late 90s, structure was
the ish.
It was the alternative to those of us who refused to go preppy, bleach our hair blonde, and conform to Abercrombie and Fitch. I guarantee you that the current Express Men is a much better clothing line. Check it out sometime. No. I shan't.
Look, I remember getting stuff at Structure and then seeing people on Comedy Central wearing it. And I thought, okay, well, if I'm going to the same place where basic cable stylists are shopping, that's not the worst.
The dress shirts are great for any night on the town or any formal occasion. I don't have nights on the town.
You have nights on the couch.
Yeah. Also, Dave was completely right from a couple podcasts ago. Cracked magazine was the unfunny wannabe of Mad.
Yes, but crack.com is much better.
Thank you, Andrew.
Stay strong, Andrew.
Yeah.
Get out of the suburbs.
Yeah, leave that town, please.
Go be gay somewhere.
Dear Mr. Duraldi, Mr. Duraldi and Mr. White, it's Julian from The Cinema Touch. Again, two quick questions. This time, after Mr. White's big announcement, I began rereading some of his old Movies.com reviews and was delighted to see that he gave the delightful DreamWorks animated film Monsters vs. Aliens 5 stars. Mm. Do you remember this? If so, you are probably that film's biggest champion. I do remember that. I thought Monsters vs. Aliens was really funny.
I like that movie a lot. And I love the supporting character of the President of the United States, played by Stephen Colbert, who was drawn to look like Dave Berg in the old Mad magazine.
Secondly, I was wondering, is there any auteur whose filmography either of you feel to be one that you are behind on? I know Mr. Duraldi has mentioned Andrei Tarkovsky in the past as a director he needs to see more of. If so, whom? The podcast is still as golden as ever. Your friend Julian, The Cinema Touch.
I have tons of them. I mean, I feel like I'm behind on Bergman and Kurosawa and Ozu. And I know I'm supposed to see more Antonioni, but I haven't liked the Antonioni that I have seen, frankly. Yeah, I'm, you know, just about everybody. What about you?
John Ford.
Right, I know you were working on that one.
Mm-hmm.
How's your Hitchcock?
I would say I've seen about 70% of the Hitchcock films.
I don't think that's true.
I think that is true.
I don't think you know how many films
I haven't
films
known
there
you
are.
My whole life, all right?
Yeah, but he's made
you
a lot
You didn't show
movies.
Up until I was 30.
You
can calm down.
Have you seen Stage Fright or I Confess or Under Capricorn or Jamaica Inn or Torn Curtain?
You!
Uh-huh. As I thought. How about the Paradine case?
Listen. Are we gonna play like this?
I'm just saying, you're claiming 70% of this filmography, and 50, it's a huge 50, filmography.
50%.
You get 38.
I'm gonna go count. I'm gonna go make a count.
Right.
I'll count. I'll come
well,
back
next
to you with
week.
The,
we'll talk about
I'll
it.
I'll do math on my calculator. Ooh. From Texas Instruments, right. And then I will have a thing for
look,
you.
I'm not questioning your
percentage.
I'm not questioning your status as a cineast. I'm just saying Hitchcock was prolific.
So's your face.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Who else?
Everybody.
Yeah. All right. That's a fair answer.
Everybody. I need to see more of everything by everybody.
Yeah.
The end.
Next.
I have no idea what this means. It's from Chuck. All it says is the essay contests were good. I don't know what that means.
Oh, that's a follow. That's the second email to the follows the first one.
Oh, no bribes.
Yes.
Subject line: no bribes, right. From Chuck. I'm with Alonzo. Trust your listeners. It's not the number, it's the quality of the people you can bank on. And again, I have no idea what we're talking about.
Remember last week where I was saying that I wasn't going to bribe people to go leave us reviews on iTunes? I do, however, want to thank Dustin and Captain Rito for leaving us nice reviews on iTunes. And I would urge our listeners, if you like this show, to please go to iTunes and leave us a review, because the more good reviews we get, the better placement that iTunes gives us on their iTunes, on their podcast page.
This is from Cindy. I think this is the first time I've heard from Cindy.
Okay.
I get to know some of the folks who write to us because their names pop up again and again.
Sure.
To Mr. Duralde and Mr. White,
mm-hmm.
Thank you for your podcast. I'm a new listener, although I'm old. So I remember when Mr. Duralde used to write for Movie Line.
Ooh. Movie Line, the print magazine or the website? I've survived them both.
Yeah, it says rest in peace, Movie Line. So this was back in the day.
I guess she was the magazine, Line. Yeah.
In last week's podcast, you read Matt Severson's top 10 list, which somehow contained 40 movies, thus stretching the concept of 10.
Mm-hmm.
In this week's podcast, you referenced this mega list, which Mr. Duralde called Severson Alexanderplatz. I had to pause the podcast at that point because I was laughing out loud.
Oh.
Thank you for making the only Berlin Alexanderplatz joke I've ever heard. Incidentally, what's your favorite movie that lasts several days? Mine is Set on Tango.
Well,
thanks again for the podcast, Cindy from Honolulu.
That's another filmmaker whose oeuvre I need more catching up on.
You've seen like one Bela Tarr film.
I saw that one that we saw.
His
first film. Yeah, that's it. My favorite long movie is probably the 5-hour Until the End of the World. Which I've seen two or three times now, the Wim Wenders film. Not to be confused with the 2.5-hour version that Warner Brothers released. This is his full 5-hour version that, when it screens, it shows in three parts with two intermissions.
Yeah.
And I love that one.
Speaking of Set and Tango, I just started reading that book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it was a book first.
Apparently so, yeah, which I had no idea until that arrived in the mail.
A Hungarian writer, Laszlo Krasznahorkai.
Okay.
Don't ask me to say his last name.
How's the book?
It's a boy.
Dense.
Could it be complicated? On the back of the book copy?
Difficult?
Here's the blurb.
Rigorous?
Here's the blurb. The Hungarian master of the apocalypse, says Susan Sontag.
That's the kind of blurb you take to the bank. Yeah, well, Susan Sontag said I'm the Hungarian master of the apocalypse, so shut up.
Here's the rest of her quote. Inexorable, visionary, both an anatomy of desolation at its most appalling, and a stirring manual of resistance to desolation through inwardness. This is a book, ladies and gentlemen. I'm about 25 pages in, and I think there have been about 4 sentences. They run for pages. His sentences run for pages. It is truly the opposite of summer reading.
Yeah, I'm reading Stephen Sondheim's Finishing the Hat. It's great.
I'm stoked to carry this matte black book around with me all summer. With my head in it. And people say, what are you reading? And I'll be like, Satan Tango.
It's inexorable.
It's about desolation, says Susan Sontag. And then they're going to walk away and think about how great I am.
They'll think about something.
He just turned 51 and he's living life. Reading Hungarian apocalypse books.
Because he's near death.
All right, this is a list that wants to be knifed. Wait a second. Okay, this is from Noah.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Mr. Duralde and Mr. White. I have a top 10 HBO show list. Hope that's okay. No!
It is not.
It is not okay. What you have to do is one of two things, Noah. You have to do one of these two things. You have to send us a list of movies.
I think he did that. No, he didn't. Sorry. No. He sent us another email about movies, but not.
He says he loves us very much.
Well, that's great. But yeah,
this is starting a bad precedent if we do. All right, here's what's going to happen, though, Noah. LKTV is right around the corner.
That's right.
There will be a podcast about the television by us. I'm just announcing that right now.
Okay.
This summer, when we launch our subscription situation,
that will be one of the premiums.
One of the premiums of this subscription will be an extra podcast, a podcast of the television.
Yes.
LKTV. We will knife your shows.
Then.
Then.
And only then.
The end. So, movies?
Yes.
Movie on the list of movies. Or you can wait.
For the TV podcast.
For the TV podcast, which will come along soon. Yes. I promise, quite soon. But thank you for being great and a listener. Here's my favorite part. I have to read you the rest of this thing. I have a top 10 HBO list. I hope that's okay, and I hope I'm 100% knife. I'm black. Thank you, my wonderfully gay friends. Now, what are your favorite HBO shows? I love you guys very much. I love this letter. But we're not going to knife your shows until LKTV.
We're so just saving it.
This is an exercise in patience. Young people have to learn patience. Oh, okay, here's...
And
here's,
he brought a second thing that was about a movie.
Okay, here's another email from Noah. Hey, Dave and Alonzo, hosts of the greatest movie podcast ever. You know what I love about Noah already? Buttering us up in major ways.
The soft soap.
You'll go far with that, young man. I was wondering what your thoughts are on the 2002 Western animated film Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron. Ha 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 ha! I just mentioned Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron.
I thought that was a weird bit of synchronicity.
Early in this podcast. And now you know that I do not read these letters before saying anything, or else I would not have done that. I don't have an opinion on Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron.
I never saw it.
He says, I personally think that it is the greatest movie of all time.
Well,
and trust me, I've seen many a movie throughout my span of 15 years.
Is he 15?
I don't know. I guess.
Oh, so you didn't make that up. He actually said that.
He says my span of 15 years.
Oh, okay.
Now, he I don't know if it means he's 15 or if he's been watching movies for 15 years.
Right.
We don't know.
Okay.
I think it's the greatest movie of all time because it has wrenched my heart in ways no other movies have done. Every time I watch the film, it makes me cry a thousand rivers and then cry a thousand more. That's right. There is a perfect reason for me making my favorite movie ever. Thank you, my beautiful, light-skinned gay friends.
I feel like Lena Horne suddenly.
Are white people
light-skinned?
Light-skinned?
I thought that was something else.
You're my new favorite listener, Noah. I'm going to call myself light-skinned from now on. Yeah, if the color of milk is light-skinned, then that's how light my skin is.
Yeah, you're as light as Emma Stone.
I know.
Emma Stone in Aloha.
This is from Robert. Here is a direct quote from my exasperated 13-year-old daughter when I told her that I didn't want to take her to see Aloha. This is weird moments that we're having now. Here's the direct quote from my exasperated 13-year-old daughter when I told her that I didn't want to take her to see Aloha. Your podcast is ruining our family.
Well, we're doing our best.
Hey, kid, are you listening? Go see the movie by yourself. You're 13. You're grown.
Don't send anyone to see Aloha.
No. That's wrong. That's the wrong thing to say.
Uh-huh.
Here's what. All right. 13-year-old kid, I know you're listening, because your dad's listening.
And because you know the show is ruining your family.
All right. I don't know you at all, kid. All I know is you're 13 and you're a daughter. Here's what you do. Demand that your father drop you off at the movie theater alone. You're 13. You're grown. My mother was doing this to me when I was 7.
Yeah, well, it was a more innocent time, Dave.
This was back in the olden times. When you could do that, and no one would call Child Protective Services on you. But by the time I was 13, I was seeing everything alone.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Well, no, I would always drag friends, but yes.
Oh, God, I loved going alone. Oh, did I love going alone? No one bothering me.
It's because I had friends.
No one.
Happy birthday.
My childhood was difficult. All right. Back to you, 13-year-old kid.
Yes.
Be like, Dad, take me to the movies. I'm going to see Aloha without you. Screw your podcast.
I don't need you. I don't need anybody.
I don't need these two old guys telling me what movie I should see and what I can't see. I'm 13. I'm an adult. I'm going to see Aloha. So then, of course, she goes to see Aloha by herself and comes home and tells her dad that it was the best movie of all time.
Yes.
Just to make him angry.
She loves that Emma Stone.
Yeah. Do this.
And then sometime in college...
You can't begin rebelling against your family soon enough.
And then someday when you're in college, it'll pop up somewhere on TV or your laptop or whatever we're watching movies on, and you'll watch it again and think back,
why did I
like
that
time you went to the movies by yourself, and like, oh yeah, this is not very good. But it sure was great going to the movies by myself that time.
Oh God, it was so great going to the movies by myself when I was a kid. It was like my own personal fort. Like, no one could talk to me. No one could bother me.
And the best part
no
is...
No one annoying me.
If you go see Aloha,
you'll be
the only person in the theater.
You'll be alone in the theater, which is even better.
Yes. It'll be like you're Howard Hughes, and you can Google Howard Hughes and find out who that is. But yeah, there won't be anybody there to get in the way.
He wore Kleenex boxes on his feet.
Yeah.
I don't recommend you doing that
at
the theater when you're
It's not good for your arches.
You do... You want to have more friends than I had as a child. Mm.
It's okay. Look at you now.
Super popular on the internet
That's
now.
That's right.
We're done.
We are? That's it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, as always, we thank you for listening. And a shout out this week to a friend of ours with a new podcast, our friend Joel Ryan, who we've known for ages.
Yeah.
Had a podcast that was called Former Child Star Central, and she decided to rename it because that was too limiting somehow. So now it's called The Joel Ryan Thing, Joalryan, and you can get her show at iTunes and all the usual places, and we're hoping to have her on our show soon, so give her a listen and check it out. Also, of course, go visit ChristyLemire.com. Listen to the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney and the Schmoes Know and the Rotten Tomatoes podcast and Malton on Movies and the Canon, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, the Criterion cast, Film Spotting SVU, the Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. Once again, we thank Blue for our wonderful theme music, even though Dave butchered it this week.
Enhanced it. I collaborated.
The remix!
Yeah, it was the remix.
You can find more about Blue and his great music at Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia. We are, of course, working on our upcoming Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episode dedicated to What's Up, Doc?
Yeah, we are.
In the meantime, you can purchase our extra episodes where we do commentary tracks for The Poseidon Adventure, Josie and the Pussycats, Two for the Road, Clue, and The Apple. And those are all available for $1.99 each. All you have to do is PayPal $1.99 to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know which episodes you want and where you want them sent. You can subscribe to this show on iTunes. And again, we thank everybody who has left us a review there, including our new ones from Dustin and Captain Rito. The more reviews we get, the better placement we get on the iTunes podcast page. So please, if you enjoy this show, do go leave us a review there. You can also stream the show for free at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com and leave us positive feedback there as well. You can also stream the program from our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. And if you haven't liked it yet, please do. You can follow us on Twitter at @LinoleumCast. You can follow me at @AduraldE, @AduraldE. Or you can follow Dave at @DLelandWhite, all one word. And of course, subscribe to our YouTube page and join the Linoleum Knife group page on Facebook where our fans meet to talk about movies. And you can contact us directly at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Leave us your top 10 lists and other thoughts about the show or film in general. We love hearing from you.
Goodbye.
Happy birthday, Dave.
Goodbye.